the person you are on podcasts, the person you are when you speak, the person you are to everybody in the public, does that person wake up with Lindsay Pollack? Mm. Does that person take Nicholas and Lee to school every day? Or are you somebody that just talks it? And I want to be someone who walks it and not just talks it. And I think God's given me another opportunity for this. I think because he wants to be like, I think you can do it. I believe you can do it. And I think, you know, especially the last couple years, doing a much better job of pointing to him and the reasons why I have what I have.
Welcome to What's Next with Eric Wood, where we will prepare you to make your what's next in life your best yet. Our next guest is David Pollack, and David had an incredible college football career for the Georgia Bulldogs and is also a former NFL linebacker. You can now see David all over ESPN covering college football and is a part of the College Game Day crew. He also has a podcast called Family Goals that is a great listen. I'm looking forward to talking some ball with David, but more importantly, I'm looking forward to hearing about life after ball and how he's striving to be a rock star Christian, dad, and husband. If you haven't already, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you tune in weekly. And also, if you haven't already, go to Amazon, get my new book, Tackle What's Next, and the link to that is in the show notes. Thanks and enjoy. David, welcome to the podcast, brother.
Thanks for having me on, my man.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure. I've been looking forward to this one. There's so many different directions just with the parallels of football and faith and now sports media that we could go. But I want to start here. I was born and raised in Cincinnati. I was so excited. I was still a Bengals fan when they drafted you. I hadn't graduated from Louisville yet, hadn't made the jump to the Bills. So I was still a big-time Bengals fan. But what was your reaction to getting drafted to the Bengals? I played in the longest playoff drought in all of pro sports. The Bengals, I believe at the time you were drafted to then, owned that title. So what was your reaction to getting drafted to Cincinnati?
So I had they give you a phone for the draft, and I had a phone, and I had a hat for every team. And I was pretty sure I was going to be a first-round pick. So every time somebody went on the clock, so Alex Smith was pick one, 49ers, put the hat on. They didn't pick me. I threw it down the steps. Dolphins, Ronnie Brown, so on, so on. It made it kind of weird because the Texans actually traded down and then traded back up. So I threw the hat down the steps just to go get it again to bring it back up. But the Bengals, honest to goodness, was the only hat I put on. And I looked at my phone and I was like, please don't ring. Mm. And I say that because the career losing, like, I'd seen the videos with the bags on their heads and people not like supporting the team. And I kind of knew enough about it where I was like, crap, you know, they're not very good. And actually Coach Lewis called me and he was like, hey, we think about picking you. And he was like, oh, I was like, wait a minute. If I didn't pick up the phone, maybe I'm not dependable. They won't pick me. but ended up being a place that I absolutely loved and loved the town, loved where we lived, expected honestly to call it home for a long time, but God had different plans. So the first reaction was not good. It was not positive. But, man, my first year, you know, we win the division. We go to the playoffs, and then Carson ends up blowing his knee out in the first round, which was unfortunate. But not good first reactions, but love Cincinnati.
Yeah, I was at that playoff game. We'll never forget Kimo von Ohlhoff and going into the side of Carson's leg and just the silence that ensued as everyone knew what the fate of the Bengals, and you guys had an incredible team, what their fate was going to be. And the reality of football is if you knock the quarterback out of the game, your chance of winning becomes very great if you're the defense that did it. We're going to get to God's different plan for your career in 1 second, but I just want to know what your reaction was when you have this storied career at Georgia, rushing the passer off the edge, and then you get to Cincinnati and they say, hey, David, we're going to make you an off-ball linebacker. What was your reaction in that moment?
Well, it wasn't a big surprise to me. And I say that because, Eric, when I went to high school, when I got there at high school as a true freshman, coach says we ran 40s and did weights and all that stuff. And the next day he goes, hey, man, what position do you play? I said, you know, fullback and linebacker. And he was like, bro, you're in a 6-flat 40. No, you don't anymore. You play offensive line. Went to offensive line. Sophomore year, that my freshman coach, after my sophomore year, he takes over as a varsity coach going into my junior year, and he's the one who actually moved me back to fullback because I kind of hit puberty and grew and got stronger. When I got to Georgia, I signed at Georgia as a fullback, and I played defensive tackle as a true freshman. Everybody went to the NFL after my freshman year, and so I played defensive end, first time I've ever played defensive end. So I didn't really, you know, I always tell people it's like living in the basement and then moving up to the third floor. It's so different, like where your eyes are and how much goes into it. But man, I've learned along the way, I don't know what's best for me. And I've learned along the way that wherever I'm at, dude, be great and give it all you got. And so I trusted, you know, my coaches were making the right decision. Did I think I was a 3-4 outside backer or a defensive end? Probably. But I had the cool freedom at Cincinnati too. When we went dime, we went nickel. You know, I went defensive end a good bit and still got to rush the passer. So I'll never forget later on down the road, actually, Tom Dimitroff was the GM of the Falcons, and I was doing radio in Atlanta. And he was like, dude, we had you at the Patriots. He was like, you were number one on our board. And he said, we were going to make you the next Brewski. He was like, we were going to put you in the middle, put you on the outside, move you all over the place because of your versatility. So, I mean, everybody sees you differently in different perspectives, but I learned at a young age in football, man, just work, just grind, just do what they tell you to do and work as hard as you can because you really don't know what you're going to be and what you're going to be best at.
Man, be great where you are. That's so good. And yeah, I was drafted. I played only center in college, get drafted by the Bills. They moved me to guard. I eventually had the opportunity to go back to center. Even that much of a switch is difficult to then get your hand out of the dirt and get off the line of scrimmage, go to that second level. Totally different. And I can appreciate all that you put into, and I've heard you talk about all that you put into that going into that second year. Like, okay, now I fully understand. You don't know what you don't know. Okay, now I understand what I didn't know. So now I'm going to understand coverage. I'm going to understand the pass game a lot more, and I'm going to be exactly where I need to be. I've also heard you talk about, you know, it was training, it was physicality, it was everything heading into that second year to play to your standard. And you mentioned before God had different plans for you. I know the story. Will you please explain to the listeners what happened in that second year where the course of your career in life would change?
You know, it's you're exactly right, because I'll never forget, man, we're lining up and we're playing combo coverages. So we're playing 23, we're playing cover two to a certain formation, cover three to another formation. I remember lining up my first year, and I was like, oh yeah, got this, 2x2, playing cover two, nailed it. That guy goes in motion, I'm like, crap, what is it now? Like, oh, it's 3x1, okay, I'm playing cover three. So your head was absolutely swimming. But coming into my second year, man, I knew the playbook. I was dialed in. I told my wife, I'm like, listen, babe, we're not going to Hawaii until I make a Pro Bowl, and then we can go. And that's back when you went to Hawaii. And I was ready to rock and roll. I had a pretty good, you know, rookie year. And then the second game, second play, one of my goals was physicality and playing off the ball linebacker. And remember, this is the day and age where you actually could hit people and not, like, get kicked out of a game like you do now. And so I wanted to be physical. And the first opportunity I got, it was a draw play. And I kind of dropped back and play pass. And then I come downhill and I smack Ruben Drones with everything I had in me. And it was the first time in my life that, you know, I had stingers before. And stingers were something that are normal if you played football. It was the first time I didn't have the ability to get up. And I could not move my upper body at all. And, you know, it was a shock. It was a blow. And then they take you underneath the, you know, the stadium, and they have the X-ray machines and the MRIs. And, you know, I knew within an hour or so, like, they came out and they let me know pretty quickly, like, hey man, you fractured your C6. And I was like, cool, you know, C5, C6. I was like, cool. Well, you know, a couple of weeks I'm back. And they're like, nah, that means you broke your neck. And I was like, can we stick to fractured C6? Because that sounds a heck of a lot better than a broken neck. And right then, man, I knew, man, from 6 years old, that's what I wanted to do. Anybody that would listen, I told them I was going to play in the NFL. And I knew, man, I was like, crap, that's a big deal. And I remember getting in the ambulance with my wife, and both of us had tears flooding down, and was like, there's a good chance, like, they cut my uniform off me, and this is a good chance that this is never going back on. And the realization of that was tough. It was tough to swallow. It was, but I did have faith. And the great thing about it was I'd been through hard things, and I realized that God's always there. And you know, through my next several months, it was hard. It was difficult, you know, to go from a couple of days going into a halo brace when they drill it in your skull and you can't move for 4 months, you know, going to that to a neck brace for several months, to surgery, to a neck brace again. And so it was difficult, man. It was a hard pill to swallow, knowing that you wanted to do this and you wanted to do this and you wanted to be this. And I'd finally gotten to the point where I'd made my dream come true. And now I was at a crossroads, and, you know, I had spoke at FCA all my life, and, you know, all through college, and I had been vocal about my faith in college and talked about it being a priority. But bro, now I had an opportunity to, what's really inside of you? Like, are you going to be a man of what you talk about? And so it was an awesome opportunity. It was the coolest moment for me, because the Bible says, be still and know that I am God. And if you knew me at that time, I didn't do that. I didn't hear a lot from God, because I would go, 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 go. What can I do next? What can I do next? And God just slowed everything down. And it was awesome. It was unbelievable how rewarding it was for him to start to reveal things in my life that I needed to get better at. Started to reveal things in my life of who I was surrounding myself with, and who I needed to get, you know, cut bait with in my life, and who was in my right for life for the right reasons. Really immense gratitude and thankfulness for my wife, because she did my wounds. Like, she cleaned around my halo every night. She gave me, you know, sponge baths in my halo, and like, she took care of me, and I got to see her heart and what she was about. And man, was that a blessing. So I think it was that moment in life that every single person who's listening, if you haven't hit it yet, it's coming. Like, we're all getting ready for it. You're either getting ready for it and you're going to be ready for it, or you're not. But it's the moment when you get to apply all these things you've been learning about with adversity, and all these examples you have in your Bible that you can read about people that faced, you know, huge mountains, and none bigger than Job in the Bible. And you look at any character in the Bible that you've studied, like, they all face tribulations and trials, and they all screwed up because they're all humans and they're born of the flesh, just like me and you. So an opportunity to apply my faith. And I knew that no matter what, as I went through that journey, I was like, dude, no matter what I'm going through, man, somebody's got it worse. Mm. And God started to really reveal that to me and show, like, there's people that buried their kids today. You're not supposed to bury your kids. There are people that got terminal illnesses today, and just some real, real struggle. And I had struggle, sure. And I had to learn how to, I mean, I'll never forget, I benched 455 in college, and the day I got cleared to lift weights, I benched 135 twice, and I was convulsing, shaking. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I had an opportunity to go, okay, I used to bench this, but you know what? That's not where I'm at. And I think that's encouragement for everybody. Like, it doesn't matter where I was. Like, that's not where I was, what I did. That doesn't matter, no matter where you are. Like, take it today, and let's make today be the best we can possibly be. Let's be the best we can today, not worrying about all the comparisons about what we used to be or what other people are doing. And I started to build a mindset of kind of everyday counts, and started to kind of build off of that as my dreams were, you know, being crushed and changing.
Man, I appreciate you sharing that. There's a lot of gold in there. I've heard you talk about how the neck injury and your career being taken from you at the time, it seemed like the worst thing that ever happened to you, but you've come to realize that it's the best thing that's ever happened to you. When you were talking about your wife cleaning your wounds, my rookie year in the NFL, I did the Joe Theismann leg break, and my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, had to move up to Buffalo to take care of me because either one of my parents quit their job, or she was going to come up and take care of me. So she drops out of school in November. She was still at the University of Louisville. She comes up there, and I got to see my wife as a caregiver. So I got to see what she was likely going to be like as a mother. I got to see how sacrificial she was willing to be to drop out of school and come take care of me, how committed she was. Like, yes, that Joe Theismann leg break sucked, but I got to understand what the woman of my dreams was going to be like for the rest of our life because of that. And it's that perspective, and it's not that it doesn't hit you in the moment when you're going when you're in the storm. It's so hard to find perspective. We all want to look for perspective in the moment. Sometimes it's about getting through the moment, and yes, making the best of it, and having a foundation of faith is what gets you through it, and then you get an appreciation for the perspective that comes through it. And so, man, I appreciate it.
Right to that vein, Eric. Like, I didn't realize how much this affected me being a dad. Like, I didn't realize how much I was going to like glean from this and learning patience, like learning how to understand things that don't come your way and learning how to lose your dreams. And here's the thing, like I was always successful and I was always driven and I always, you know, worked for everything. And I went out and tried to earn everything. Well, a lot of times I can't fight my battles. And I think that's important. There are a lot of battles in life that you can't fight. And as you get older, I can't fight battles for my kids.
Right.
Like, they've got to go fight their battles, and learning that and learning the patience and learning all those different things. It made me a way better husband. It made me a way better dad. It made me a way better coach now with football. And I wouldn't trade it. I wouldn't give it back. I don't want a 15-year NFL career. And people would say probably, yeah, it's easy to say that because you're doing things now that are successful. But like, we all look at our bodies and they change, and we all look at our minds and they change, and we kind of get upset sometimes, and I'm not what I was. But like, the wisdom we gain as we get older and the maturity we gain as we get older, it's worth the wrinkles. It's worth some of that stuff, man, because man, is it easier to react to different things and to teach our kids and to help them walk through, you know, different avenues of their lives. But without those storms, we don't know how to help our kids walk through it. We don't know how to, like you said, focus on what we can focus on in those storms to get out of them and, you know, and continue to grow and continue to learn. And it's something I say to my kids all the time. It's lessons, not losses. Like, yeah, you lost, but you got to go lose a bunch to figure out how to win. And now we know what we might do a little bit better next time. And I think if we would approach things like that, and this is a learning opportunity. What am I going to glean? Because here's another thing. Like, God allows you to be tested. Every single one of us will be tested. God's not testing us, but he's going to allow us to be tested. And here's the thing about testing. It's kind of like in school. When you fail a grade, you take it again. It's no different. Like, if you continue to fail tests and you continue to fail opportunities that they come up, you're going to keep taking them again and again and again. But when you pass those tests and you learn, okay, I didn't handle that like a godly man. And by the way, I got plenty of instances I could point to with that, whether it's adult men's league basketball yelling at refs, like, bro, what are you doing, man? Like, you know, and this is here's something for you, Eric. This is new. I've never even really shared this with anybody. I got slapped in the face the other day, man. I got a text message from one of my buddies, and this hit me as hard as anything I've ever been hit. I was in tears on a flight with my kids to Utah. He said, if Jesus came to your house last week and he spent time with you all week and he answered every prayer that you prayed, how many people would be saved? And Eric, I had to look at my kids and I had to text my buddy back, and I'm going to start crying, but I had to tell him to text him back. And my answer was zero. Like, my answer was zero. Like, I'm not asked and kind of like, Jesus has commanded us to share our faith. Like, he's commanded us to do. And so it was awesome because it rocked my world, man. And I read it to my kids. I'm like, my answer was zero. What was y'all's? Like, and we started almost every night now, at least 3 or 4 days a week, praying for kids in their lives that we can go impact and go touch, you know. But it rocked me to the core, man, because I realized that it was zero. But all these things, man, that we're learning, we're taking tests, and we're gonna see the test, and we're gonna fail it sometimes. But man, if we can pass those tests, we can keep moving on, and we can keep going to those higher levels and improving ourselves.
That's so good. Yeah. When Sean McDermott first got to the Bills, he took a franchise over that had lost for a very long time. And one of the first things he said was, look, I hope we break the playoff drought this year. I hope we go 16-0, played 16 games at a time. But you know what we're going to do? We're either going to win or we're going to learn, and we're going to get better because of it. And I often tell people that. I'm like, you only truly lose in life if you don't learn from the loss. And we actually talked about the difference between being tested and being tempted at our men's group in Louisville this morning. And so fresh on my brain there. And I love the perspective that you gave from it. And you're going to hear that again, or those listening that are in my men's group are going to hear that again about how you repeat the test when you fail it as you're growing up. And God will often have you repeat a test as well, because he wants you, as James 1 said, to be mature and complete. He cares about you in that way. And there's so much gold in there. I don't ask you this jokingly. I ask you this because it's that time of year. When you see these monster free agent deals and these contracts guys are signing, I know, and I say the exact same thing as you do, David. We both had career-ending neck injuries. The game was taken from us. You can't go back. There's no looking back. And for guys as competitive as us, that's a blessing in itself, that we don't have to sit there our entire life saying, should we have done it more? Can we go back? We're done. Okay, that being said, when you see these monster deals, do you ever sit there and think, man, what if? What if I could have played for, you know, because you would have been a $20 million defensive player a year, period.
Yeah, I think you could make a lot of money. I haven't done that. I have said, like, you know, look at the salaries and dang, that's crazy how much money they're making. But I will say this too, man, like, my goodness, like what I have and what I'm blessed with, like, it's kind of hard to complain. Like, it's hard to look at something else. It's hard with what I have in my life to look at somebody else and go, man, I really want that. And I'm not saying I don't have moments just like everybody else, right. But like, it's just, God is so good. And he's given me so much, and he's given me so much health with my parents and my family and my kids and so much stuff. So I try not to look at it from a monetary standpoint if I can't, but yeah, these guys, like the quarterbacks especially, you know, they're making life-changing money that could create, you know, success for their legacies to come for generations upon generations upon generations. And it's crazy, but we also do realize too, they're putting a lot of work in, mm-hmm. and they're putting their body through a lot. And I'll say this, I'm more thankful that God took it away from me, because I would have beat the crap out of my body and played for 15 years, and I'd be a 40-year-old man that can't walk very well.
Like, I said the same thing.
But I would have had that mindset, because I was always and am such a grinder. Like, I just enjoyed the process of it so much. So, you know, I'm glad that it got taken away from that standpoint for my health. And then, you know, I will say this. I firmly believe, like, I don't think I did a good job and being a good steward with what God gave me the first time. And with football, I got a little bit swallowed and encompassed with all the attention, and it made me want to be a hermit, and it made me want to kind of go inside and not pour into people as much as I can. And I firmly believe that God said, all right, bro, I'm doing this again, and I'm going to give you College Game Day and a huge platform and a big quote unquote following. What are you going to do with it? And I think I've done a much better job going like this with my platform. And I had a challenge a couple years ago. 2 years ago, I preached to our middle school group, and it was about being real or being counterfeit. And I asked them, is social media real? There's 100 kids in the room, and all of them counterfeit. And I was like, wow, that's pretty impressive. It's like, okay. I said, I can look at your last 5 social media posts, and I said, I can tell exactly what you're about. I said, I just need 5, and I can see why you're in it, what you're doing it for, what brings you joy, what you like, what shows all I need to know about you. And I literally left, and I was like, all right, Pollock, like, go back and look at yours. And if I went back and looked, I didn't share my faith enough, man. I wasn't as vocal about it. And that's when there was a big shift in my life. Like, a big shift on social media, and I lost followers, I'm sure. Like, I don't really look at them that much, but I don't care, because I wanted to make sure that I was about what I'm preaching. And my prayer this whole year, one of my big prayer has been, The person you are on podcasts, the person you are when you speak, the person you are to everybody in the public. Does that person wake up with Lindsay Pollock? Mm. Does that person take Nicholas and Lee to school every day? Or are you somebody that just talks it? And I want to be someone who walks it and not just talks it. And I think God's given me another opportunity for this. I think because he wants to be like, I think you can do it. I believe you can do it. And I think, you know, especially the last couple of years, did a much better job of pointing to him and the reasons why I have what I have.
Yeah, I had that same feeling not long ago. Met with the head of men's ministry at Southeast Christian Church in Louisville, where I go. And we talked about, man, the challenge is just to live a completely integrated lifestyle. No, I might not live the exact same way as the head pastor at church or Chris Burke or any of my other buddies at church. That's fine. Just live an integrated lifestyle where every, you know, God and money and finances and hobbies and everything is just combined to where you're the same person all the time. And yes, continue to make progress. We're not striving for perfection, but just be completely integrated. And same way, it was social media, it was everything. And I appreciate following you on social media. Now, the post about the tweet, I'm not on social media for 2 weeks. We're doing a fast, a 2 week fast up until Easter, just to, you know, just a reset. And but I did see that prior, talking about on the airplane about, hey, you know, who would have come to Christ if he answers your prayer? So I see that you're impacting people. And I know you know this, but you're impacting so many that don't reach out and say, David, that was gold, that don't retweet it or even reply. You're impacting so many through that lifestyle. So I appreciate you sharing that. I appreciate you sharing that with the middle schoolers, because we didn't have to deal with that at that age. And, you know, we talk about how, man, you know, our kids are going to grow up living differently than us, and they have so much at their fingertips, and maybe they'll have access to more things because of maybe certain levels of success. But man, we didn't have to live with social media and the comparison game that's just going to constantly weigh on them. That's a different, I mean, this is a whole different podcast, but that is an adversity that we didn't have to deal with. And I don't envy at all from those young folks.
I don't, but we still control that.
Yep.
And our family still has the power to be different. And our family still has the power to say no to things. Like, you know, cell phones with my kids for a while. Like, I'm the only sixth grader that doesn't have it. I'm the only seventh grader that doesn't have it. I'm the only eighth, but I don't care. Like, God's called us to be different. God's called us to be set apart. We're not trying to set our standards on what the world wants us to set our standards on. And my son's in eighth grade. And listen, right now, he completely embraces. He's like, dude, I don't want social media. I don't want social media. And he embraces that. And that might change. But like, we've also got to show our kids that it's, you know, by our example, by the way, by our leading, because if the phone bothers you and it's something you're on the phone all the time, your kids are going to be on their phones all the time. Like, that's something that it goes hand in hand. You make what you model. And parenting, you want your kids to have great marriages, model a great marriage. Show your wife or show your daughter what it's like to, how a real man loves a woman. Like, that's the most powerful thing she's going to learn about who she picks in a partner. Same thing for vice versa for your son. Show your son how a dang husband puts a wife first, not second, not kid centric. Like, here on earth, wife, guess what? The Bible says two becomes one. It doesn't say that about kids and family. It says you and your wife become one. We become a team. We become one flesh. Like, it's us. And without us, there are no kids. And you see so much of kids first, kid-centric. No, it's wife first, wife-centric. I'm chasing, listen, my relationship with God is obviously first and foremost, but as I'm, and most of y'all have probably seen this, as I'm chasing my relationship with God, if me and my partner are here and we're chasing God, we're growing closer together. Like, we're meeting as we have our vertical relationship, we're going vertical and meeting towards God, and it's growing our relationship together. But I mean, if social media is hard, yeah, but like, people tell me all the time, well, at some point, your 14-year-old is going to have social media. Sure. But my 14-year-old's walk right now is not fully developed. What he can compute and what he takes in right now isn't what it's going to be at 16. in 18. So if I can continue to delay that as much as possible, then I'm going to be winning. And I think parents got to be, it's okay to be different, man. Yep. It's okay to ask your kids to be different. It's okay to ask your kids to serve. You know what we do on Sundays? We go to church. You know what we do on Wednesdays? We skip sporting practices and we go to church. Like, my wife leads the seventh grade group. I lead the eighth grade group. Like, church in our house is more important than God. I'm sorry. God in our house is more important than sport.
Yep.
Like, we've got it so backwards, I think, with what we let our kids prioritize. And, oh, they don't want to do this, they don't want to do that. Like, Sundays we go to church. Like, if you chose to stay up late and stay up past 12 o'clock and 1 o'clock and you're tired, Sundays we go to church. I mean, I don't care. Like, that's our family time. That's what our family is going to do. And I think a lot of people naturally go to, well, we have a devotional. We do this, so it's okay. Okay, when you make somebody physically show up somewhere, that's where your priorities are. Like, you're going to put your priorities there. Like, my kids know we'll go in uniform, and then after we go to church, we can go to our game. We can go fit in where that fits in. And I'm not saying we don't miss church sometime for sporting events. We do sometimes, but we're not missing very much because God is more important, because cleats hang up. You had to hang yours up. I had to hang mine up. Sneakers are going to be hung up from playing sports, but how are we developing a relationship and cultivating things for our kids that are important and not just, you know, they have to be like everybody else and they have to run the race and they have to be busy and they have to do this, that, and the other. I mean, we need to set our standards for our family and we need to lay them out and we need to live them.
This podcast is brought to you by Encore Golf. Encore has an award-winning lineup of premium golf balls that are played worldwide on nearly every professional tour. Their team of the industry's most accomplished engineers have created a ball that is the highest performing golf ball on the market today from their proprietary perimeter weighting in the ball. To take your game to the next level, go to EncoreGolf.com and get yours today. And the link to that is in the show notes. And be different. That is so good. I say all the time that we're different. Woods are different, and that's okay. We do things differently. We eat differently. Yes, daddy goes out and gets in the pool when it's 40 degrees outside for inflammation. Like, we do different things and that's okay. Like, I don't care if people think we're weird because I don't want to be like the rest of this world right now. And I try and model that to my kids all the time. Also, my little man's going to grow up with the same curly hair I did. And for a long time, I wanted to fit in. Now I love the curly hair. It separates me. It's a distinguisher. Buddy, Jack Harlow's from Louisville. He made curly hair cool. You better be thankful for Jack Harlow because you're going to grow up cool. Because curly hair was not cool on the west side of Cincinnati, but for so long, I didn't have it modeled for me that it is cool to be different. Like, that is what we are striving for in our family. I appreciate so much of what you said there, and a lot of it I needed to hear as well. As my kids are 7 and 5, we're not quite in that sports stage yet, but there's a lot that I needed to hear in there. You talk about being different, and I read something recently you put out there. You said your daily decisions, habits, commitments speak to what you say is important. You make time for what you deem is important. Your habits, what do your habits say about you? And I understand you have certain habits daily. I do as well. I'll ask you, one, what are your habits each day? You stay in great shape all year round. I try and do the same. You know, stay ready. Don't have to get ready. But what are your daily habits? And what's your nutrition regimen like these days?
Well, my nutrition is super, super boring, bro. I eat the same thing every single day of the week, except for weekends when we're traveling. Like, I just, before I came in here, I literally flied in there and I can do it in 3 minutes and like 45 seconds now. I literally have every morning for breakfast, I have 60 grams of oats. You know, I take the water real quick, a tiny bit of water in a pan, boil it. I put one egg, 3/4 carton of egg whites, and then that's my breakfast. So I'm very structured. I eat every, you know, 3 to 4 hours. I eat a meal. I hit a specific macro with every meal, you know, 50-50, you know, usually 8 to 12 on fats, but 50 carb, 50 protein. So I'm exceptionally structured most of the time. Now listen, when I travel and stuff, like, it changes and you got to bring protein shakes and adjust, but nutrition is definitely something that's been important to me for a long time. I think more importantly, though, as I've gotten older, spiritual habits are the most important thing probably for me. Like getting up, I'm going through a book with our men's group. We meet at 6 a.m. We have a chapter to read every day. You know, that accountability is unbelievable. I read books with my buddies, and we send a chapter a week in a certain book, and we encapsulate the chapter and send a review to them like at that week, which is creating accountability with them. My daily devotional, I have a book that I go through. I like having a book in my hand. I'm not as good with the, I don't love the phone as much. I'd rather just have a book, and it has, every day of the week, there's a devotional for the whole day of the, for every day of the year and go through. So again, I got to build those habits. I got to make that a priority. I get up in the morning, I get in the hot tub and I read. And that's usually that's how I start my day. But my nutrition habits, I work out 4 to 5 days a week. And, my habits as a dad that are important to me, making sure my daughter is a physical touch girl, like making sure that I'm hugging her, making sure that I'm kissing her, making sure that she knows I love her. Like, so all of it's habits. I think I read something a little while ago, like 80% of what we do in a day is habits, from brushing your teeth to everything. So I think if we can build in those, as much as you can build in those habits that are, I'm going to wake up in the morning. I know people wake up in the morning and go right to the coffee maker. Well, can I wake up 15, 20 minutes earlier and read? Can I get in my Bible? Can I read my devotionals, in the morning? So I'm a huge habit guy. Now, listen, I also understand too with my workout regimen, I meet every, 4 days a week with my 4 to 5 days a week with my buddies at 12 o'clock. And, I have that schedule where I can do that. Not everybody can do that, but whatever it is, whatever you deem important, you will take time to do. I don't have time to work out. Bull crap. You have time to work out. You have to make time to work out. What are you prioritizing? I don't have time every day to read my devotional. Bull crap. If you're intentional and you wake up 15 minutes early, you do have time to do it. So I think that was the genesis of it, is like, listen, whatever's important to you, I'll make sure that I make time. So make sure that we understand what we're doing every day and make that important. Make it, this is a non-negotiable for me. Like, I have to do this on certain days. I love texting myself the night before three things. And those are the non-negotiables. Those are on the list. Number one is the highest priority. Number two is the second highest priority. Number three is the third. It's some days it's extremely simple. Some days it's pray for three people. Some days it's tell my wife that I love her three times a day. Some days it's find, three reasons to compliment my daughter today. And then sometimes it's, it's more difficult. It's a challenge. It's a 2K row in 7 minutes. It's something different that I'll challenge myself with. But I think the older you get, the more you realize those habits that you build, man, those are the ones that are growing you. If you don't have a daily schedule or if you don't have goals to reach for, a lot of times then we just kind of go through and we just kind of do what we do and we don't continue to grow, stretch, and make ourselves get better.
Yeah, ultimately, you're going to become your habits. Habits are so tough to break. So ultimately, you are just going to become the culmination of your habits. Be so intentional about what you let become a habit in your life. That is very good. I'm interested to ask you about this. Both of our careers are cut short. We both live active lifestyles now. God blessed us in that way with our exit from the NFL. But you have your son playing football, your daughter plays flag football, I heard you say, and you coach high school football. So you're still heavily involved with football. Were there any reservations? I know there's not now. Was there ever reservations for you and just looking to partake some wisdom on me and the listeners that maybe have young sons and daughters out there about your son playing tackle football?
100% there was. 100%. And honestly, if I wasn't a part of controlling the controllables, I don't know that I would have let him start. And because I had the opportunity to coach and teach and design and structure, I think I was very, very okay with it. Listen, the game is a lot safer than the game we played too. Like, right. Continual rules. I thought when they started to change the rules, I'm like, man, this is soft as crap. Like, what are we doing here? This isn't football. And now you look and you're like, dude, it makes a lot of sense. We're protecting these guys from themselves, which is what they need. So I think the game has changed. The way we're physical has changed. The drills have changed. But here's something I think that's the way I would phrase it to parents. If you're going to let your kids play in the future, let them play as early as they want to play. Why? Why do I say that? Because when you're 5, 6, 7, 8, you move like bobbleheads and you kind of move around and you run into each other and you fall down. Like there's no consequences for your action. So when you get to be 150 pounds, Eric, and you're running around fast and you know how to strike people, now you can really get hurt. You can hurt yourself. So I think, you know, if you're going to let them play when they get older, I would let them play when they're younger, as they're learning, as they're growing. If I'm a coach, every coach in the country, I would buy Guardian caps for helmets. Guardian caps cost you $59 or something like that. You put it on your helmet, it insulates the head. Like it's, I bought them for my kids when they were a lot younger. Like it's something that you can make an investment from the Guardian cap standpoint and protect their noggins even more. It really takes the, you can hear it. It takes the helmet to helmet part out of it because it's more like helmet to pad as opposed to helmet. So, you know, not every situation is created equally. And I wouldn't let my kids play in just any atmosphere with anybody leading them. But if you find some good coaches, but here's the thing just about all this stuff. It's all, can I find the perspective part? The perspective part is these are kids and the game of football is freaking fun. Fun first. Eric, I was not the head coach of a team that ever conditioned. Why are we conditioning? Like practice should be running around, you know, tackling, hitting, sure, having fun. Like if we're practicing them hard and they're moving around and we're organized and structured, they should be getting conditioned. I don't need to get on the line, show me how tough you are at 8. Like that part of it kind of drives me nuts. So if we can compete, if we can stick to this is fun, talk to my kids fun, talk to my kids positive, talk to my kids about their attitude, talk to my kids about their effort. Don't talk to my kids about winning and losing. Winning and losing, it ultimately control what they can control. Like if they're good enough, they're going to be good enough, but I'm more controlled about their attitude. And here's another thing. Lastly, for your parents, did you have fun? Did you have a good attitude? Did you work as hard as you could? I think the big thing for parents, and then you say, I love you. No matter what, I don't care if you scored 6 touchdowns. I don't care if you missed 6 tackles and you were the worst player on the field. There ain't nothing you can do to drive your love away from me. I love you regardless. Your performance doesn't have anything to do with my love. And I think if we can keep them in those boxes and in those realms and with the good people leading us, like with good dudes leading us the right direction, I think sport's the most amazing teacher in life. But when we start to blur lines and we start to talk them a certain way and football becomes something that's, or basketball or baseball that we're doing 5 days a week, like there's a time to grind 100%, but it ain't 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, I would argue. Like there's a time they'll have to put a lot into it. But man, let's not make this as early as it needs to be for these kids, because people put on more baseball tournaments because they're making money.
Right.
It ain't because your kid's getting behind. Oh, my kid's getting behind. No, bull crap. You were good enough because Eric Wood was good enough. Like I was good enough because God made me good enough. It had nothing to do with, because I did this when I was younger. My mom and dad never put me in a camp. My mom and dad never had me a personal coach. My mom and dad never got me a personal trainer. Like, I didn't have any of that crap. God gave me a good legs and base. Like, I was really explosive. I mean, like, I just, you know, just love kids for sports. Love kids for the lessons it teaches them. Have fun. Don't celebrate home runs and touchdowns. Celebrate attitude. Celebrate effort. Like, that's what they can control. The other stuff is just a part of it that comes into the mix.
You're talking to two first round draft picks that didn't attend camps, didn't have a personal trainer, didn't do anything extracurricular outside of my high school. I didn't even start on our high school football team until I was a senior. And so for all those out there that are saying, you know, you got, you know, my kid
getting behind.
Yeah, my kid at age 10 is falling behind. He's not. I can promise you that. And for all the people out there that are calling BS on David saying that, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 playing tackle football isn't dangerous. I'll give you three. There's many more, but three things that cause more concussions at that age than playing tackle football is A, soccer, B, recess, phys ed. So unless you're going to keep your kids out of that, then don't tell me tackle football at that age is too dangerous. And the number one, can you guess number one, David?
Volleyball.
Bunk beds. Bunk beds cause more concussions documented at hospitals than any of the rest of them. That was number one. That was from Merrill Hodges' book Brainwashed, which is a pretty good read. And friend, and I had David on the I had Merrill on the podcast, and he talked a lot about that. So you can go back to that. But I recommend reading the book out there for any parents out there that have reservations about their young ones playing football at this time. I got one more for you. We're going to get a couple of recurring questions, and you don't have to elaborate too far into this, but for me and the sports media, it just seems like you guys are having so much fun on Saturdays. I know adding Pat McAfee in the mix helps, but even before Pat, it seemed like you guys just have great chemistry on College Game Day, and that's what makes it so appealing. That's what makes the show. Yes, you're at a big time game every week. Yes, there's so much passion around the set with the amount of fans there. But you four, five at Pat, you guys just seem like you're having a great time there. Is that true?
Oh yeah. I mean, we get to follow a kid's game around. I mean, it's pretty dang fun to see all the different traditions, the different schools, the different fans. I mean, it's, you know, we've had different people come in and out. You know, you talked about Pat. Reese came in for Chris Fowler years ago, and I came in, you know, 12 years ago or whatever it is. And we've had different people, but I think the integrity of the show stays the same, and it's have fun. We're not talking about politics. We're not talking about, like, we're literally going to talk to you about college football and table for college football. We're going to talk about a ton of teams, and we're going to get a ton of conversations and some real stuff with guys that love ball and that love each other. And so, man, it's a dream job. It's I tell people all the time, it's even better than football, because I wake up, I get to talk about football, be around. I wake up the next day, I don't feel like I get hit by a bus. So it's right. Beautiful.
Yeah, that's true. I'm glad to hear that. All right. I got a couple questions for you. Quick ones. Do you have a favorite verse in the Bible?
Proverbs 3:5-6 is my life verse. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean on your understanding. Acknowledge him in all your ways, and he will direct your paths.
Recently, Sherman Smith came on the podcast, and after we were done recording, when I was talking about lacking a little clarity with what my next moves would be, he said, every morning while you're brushing your teeth, look in the mirror and recite those verses, and God will show you clarity. God will show you clarity. But commit that to memory, let it sit on your heart constantly. And that gave me a lot of peace. I often ask people what their favorite restaurant is, but with your ties to Cincinnati, I know you weren't there super long, maybe. But
Jeff Ruby's.
I was gonna say, we get a lot of Jeff Ruby's. Okay, what's your favorite restaurant down in Georgia?
See, I'm the worst person to ask this, by the way, too, because I told you. Oh, yeah, because you said same things. I don't love food. My wife loves food, and she drives me nuts, because whenever we go out, she just orders two meals, and like I eat whatever's there, but I'm going to order a salad. But we love going to a place right here called Chuck's Fish, because I love sushi. I would say my favorite food, if I had to have one food, would be sushi.
Me too.
And Chuck's Fish is really good here.
Yeah, that's my favorite food too. And luckily, Ruby's has adapted that to a lot of their restaurants as well. Our one in
Louisville,
Kentucky's got an unbelievable, authentic Japanese sushi chef. Hopefully, Louisville's good enough to host College Game Day, because I want to take you there for some sushi. Louisville, a very underrated sushi town. UPS is based out of Louisville. So unless you're getting fish directly from the coast, we get it first and then it ships out. So we have incredible sushi grade fish here in town. All right.
Nice.
Last one from me. This is What's Next with Eric Wood. What's next for David Pollock? I know it's the offseason. What do you got coming down the line, kind of leading up until college football season?
Coaching my kids. I coach my seventh grader, my baby girl, in AAU basketball. I coach my baby boy in eighth grade basketball. So we'll be doing basketball for the next couple months, but then football, my high school football coaching stuff comes up in another month or so, but we'll be full-fledged high school football. My son's going to go into ninth grade next year, so starts to get a little bit more serious, but leading up to it, my summers are a lot of football. We take trips too, and we spend a lot of time as a family, but football is about to own our lives here in a couple months from the Pollock family standpoint, with Nicholas playing, me coaching, my work coming up. My wife, Lindsay, she does a lot of the planning and all that crap. The hard stuff, really. The hard stuff that I don't want to do the most, she does that stuff. So that's what's next for us, is a lot of football, a lot of coaching for me.
One quick one. What's your guys' favorite place to travel to?
I don't care where we travel as long as it's 3 to 4 days. I don't want to go for a week anywhere.
Yeah.
But my wife loves – I would say that our favorite place as a family is the lake. We love to go to the lake and surf and get on the water and those kind of – that's probably our number one spot for the Pollocks.
Yeah, that's as good as it gets. Do you guys do Reynolds Plantation down that way?
Close. That's where the coaches, all the like really nice house coaches and stuff go. So we don't go quite there, but we're like around the coves.
Yeah, I've only been there once. We rented, so we didn't have a house.
It's really nice.
It is. It's very special. Nice. David, I can't thank you enough for your time. I know, even though it's the off season, you know, you put off so much so that you get more family time this time of year. So I am incredibly grateful for you spending this time with me and the listeners. Anything I can ever do to serve you, please holler. You got a huge fan in me. And I always have been, but now you have a bunch more that got to hear truly what you're all about throughout this podcast. So thank you, brother.
Thank you, big dog. Appreciate you, Jared. Keep doing your good work, man. And
Hootay, baby. No, go Bills. See you, brother.